This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. You know Amazon Prime is not just a shipping subscription, right? It's got everything, including streaming TV and movies on Prime Video. And of course, Prime's fast, free shipping. Go from watching your favorite shows to getting your favorite things. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm your host, Conor O'Neill, and I'm delighted to be joined this morning by Christopher Beasley, Paul Wheelock and Gav Buckland to chew the fat over all things Everton. It's been quite the week for the Blues with takeover talk, transfer talk, and plenty, and the fixtures being released, of course, for the new Premier League season. But there's only one place to start, and that is with the latest in the transfer front. And Chris, I'll come to you first. Yeah. One man who is now being linked with a move away from the Blues, somewhat disappointingly, but to be expected, I suppose, is Richarlison. You wrote yesterday about Chelsea's interest, given the new owner, given the, you know, the backing Thomas Tuchel was expected to have this summer. These types of rumours are always going to come for the Blues, weren't they, Bees? Because Richarlison, like we've seen ourselves over the last couple of seasons, he's been in fine form, and he deservedly is to be linked with such big clubs, isn't he?
Yeah, it's not come as a surprise, has it? I mean, I know Michael Ball said to me he was actually surprised in a good way that Richarlison had stuck around for as long as he did, and that's why we're seeing teams who are in the Champions League being linked with his signature. I think there's a begrudging acceptance amongst many Evertonians that, given that he has 2 years left on his current contract, if he doesn't want to extend that, this is the window that perhaps do business. But I understand as of yesterday that Chelsea's interest is genuine. He is somebody they are seriously considering looking at. It depends on Lukaku going back to Inter on loan, but that one seems like it's almost a done deal, so that should be taken care of soon. But I think that we're going to go on to this with all of us now. The main sort of issue that Evertonians are having with a lot of this is the numbers that are being quoted. I mean, obviously, all deals get negotiated, but not just over 50 million, which I think is derisory, considering it's little more than what Everton actually potentially pays for him with the add-ons. But people are almost talking like that, surprised like that. That's a lot of money. If I were Everton, I'd be asking for much more than that. Maybe it's one we're gonna go back to. But given that he's Brazil's centre forward on a regular basis, going to the World Cup, regular Brazil international, an established Premier League performer, somebody who's been over here for 5 years now, 4 years at Everton, double figures in three out of those 4 years. And if we just point to Jack Grealish last summer, the fact that Manchester City paid £100 million for him, he's someone who's never even hit double figures in the Premier League. Yet people are talking about 50 million is a lot for Richarlison. I think that's insulting to Everton. So I think there's a deal to be done if somebody offers the going rate for the player. And I certainly don't think that Everton should be bullied into selling them on the cheap.
Gav Bees described the 50 million valuation that's been reported as insulting. Do you go along with that? Do you agree? Do you think Everton needs to be holding out for a lot more this summer?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but assuming that 40 million was a fair price in 2017, by the way, what happened if we had overpaid in 2017? Makes sense, doesn't it, really? 40 to 50, irrespective of the fact that we might have overpaid, is not a great increase, is it, really? You're talking maybe 60, but there's a few things going on here, isn't it? I mean, it's still, you've got to find somebody to buy, you know, purchase them at that price. And it's a bit like Spurs, isn't it, really? The club who's got to buy will want to pay 60 million. It'll be like a guaranteed start. It'd be vital for them, wouldn't it, really? That's why I would imagine, say, Spurs were only prepared to pay 50, but whatever the talk was, because they've already got Son Kane up there, haven't they? So he's an add-on to them, really. So I think, yeah, regarding the price, I think 50 is too low. 60 would probably be reasonably acceptable, and I think that would be about right, to be honest with you. there's a different market now, because before COVID and after COVID, they're two completely different transfer markets, aren't they? So there's also that to be taken into account. So I think 60 for me, which a lot of that will be profit anyway, because obviously we've amortized this, you know, that word amortized now, podcast, God bless us, amortized this transfer fee over the last 4 years. So a lot of that will be profit. I know there's an add-on, isn't it, for Watford? Yeah, but 60 for me. The only thing I say about Grealish, Chris, is he's not really a striker. Not like, is he really, with Richarlison? He's a creator, isn't he? Grealish. But yeah, the point I do agree with, 50 is far too low. 60, I'm not sure you'd get up to 70 for a player with no Champions League experience, by the way. I think that's the other thing to take into account, isn't it, really?
Paul, is it a testament, though, to Richarlison, given Everton struggles over the last couple of years, and, you know, certainly last season, and the battle against relegation, that even, you know, despite the struggles, he's still being linked with the types of teams he has. And we've heard PSG mentioned it before, Real Madrid, you know, Tottenham, you know, now Chelsea. It's a testament to him almost as a player that he's still, despite his team struggles, getting mentioned in the brackets with them, with the big name players and ahead of big summer.
No, without question, you know, and it's deserved. I know there's been times over his 4 years at Everton that I've wondered whether he was clinical enough to take his game to that next level. But the same could still be said about someone like Raheem Sterling now. And I just think if he goes to a top four team, sadly, which does seem to be the case, or if not a top four team in this country, you know, a top team like Paris Saint-Germain or Real Madrid, he'll score more goals naturally because he's got better players around him. I think he is, you know, a Champions League player in waiting, really. The fact that he's now the regular number nine or one of the three players up front for Brazil speaks volumes as well. And it's sad that we're probably having to have this discussion, because I'm pretty sure before Ancelotti was appointed, and even last summer, it seems to have given the club an extra year's grace to see what we could have done in the campaign just gone, that he has give Everton enough time to try and, if not hit the heights of a top four finish, but to be pushing closer to that. So, yeah, he's gave everything for this club. You know, there's no question about that. And I wouldn't begrudge him a move if he did get a chance to go and join a Madrid or a Paris Saint-Germain, but it would stick in the throat a little bit if it was a Chelsea or a Tottenham. But as Gav said there, I think if we were to get an offer closer to 60 million, I think it would be very hard to turn down, given the financial situation of the club. And as you rightly said there, Connor, you know, it's credit to him that he's getting linked with these clubs. And I think it would be hard pushed to deny him that kind of move as well.
Bees, do you think almost Everton are paying the price for the financial situation you find themselves in? In terms of, you know, it's well documented the clubs have FFE problems, you know, restrictions around spending, etc. That clubs almost, you know, take pity on them in terms, you know, the report in the national press is Chelsea was offered 50 million. Are they doing that because they think Everton are desperate and will look to cash in straight away because of the situation they find themselves in, the need, obviously, that, you know, everyone knows that Frank Lampard needs to overhaul the squad somehow this summer to avoid the repeat of last season?
Yeah, I think there is a certain amount of exploitation possibly being carried out here. Maybe they're being briefed, you know, the press down in London by the London club, say, look, you know, let's try it on with Everton. Almost like you said, the fact that they've been not sailing close to the wind, but it's known that they didn't have a lot of wriggle room last summer with the financial fair play. And obviously the club have always been adamant that they're liaising with the Premier League on a regular basis, and not just over the past 12 months, but for a number of years now, because they know that there wasn't a lot of scope, a lot of sort of funds available to play with, not because obviously the owner didn't have it, but to stay within the financial fair play restrictions. But I know I take Gav's point about obviously the different market now after the coronavirus, but obviously, as I said before, the Grealish fee was post COVID as well, and if you look at Chelsea, are the latest ones to be sort of to be linked with Richarlison. We understand that, like I said, the interest is genuine. I mean, they paid over 70 million for both Kepa and for Kai Havertz. Again, Havertz. I think was that pre COVID. I'm not sure, but over 70 million twice there on players who didn't have any Premier League experience. You always pay that premium for players who have obviously proven that he can do it in England. Richarlison's been over here for 5 years now. You know, he scored double figures in the Premier League 3 out of the 4 years, primarily as a left winger. I know he plays up top sometimes, but primarily out on the wing, like Grealish. And I think Grealish had actually spent in his 4 years previous to going to City, only the last two were Premier League, two before that were Championship. So I just think that Everton potentially, I mean, like say Everton could turn around now and say, well, no, if nobody's like the same way that Tottenham did with Harry Kane last summer, ironically, because obviously that was linked with Grealish, the fact that City paid 100 million for him, when nobody was prepared to pay the going rate for Kane, Kane stayed put. And maybe that ends up being the case if nobody's prepared to satisfactorily compensate Everton for Richarlison. You might even be better off holding on to him and even using him for nothing in 2 years' time if nobody is prepared to pay what you deem to be an acceptable fee this summer. Because to take a phrase from the local parlance, you don't want your kecks pulled down over this one with Richarlison, because you know he's the club's most valuable asset in many respects. We know he's a player who won for the big occasion, a real fan's favourite. And like I said, although there's a begrudging acceptance that if somebody does come calling for him, that he might move on this summer. I just feel that they've got to squeeze as much out of him as they can get. And that, like I said, as I think Gav's already alluded to, the sell-on clause with Watford. I mean, a fee just north of 50 million, you're hardly going to get any sort of profit at all on him. So maybe Evertonians are sort of right to sort of feel that there's a sort of a whispering campaign against him here, sort of the same way that Neville Southall alluded to in the relegation fight. I mean, there's so many people maybe in the national media who don't have Everton's interests at heart, and there's sort of, underestimating Everton in this respect, possibly.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Gav, one thing that you maybe could argue is a sign of the post-COVID transfer window, but saying that the Tottenham deal and the Chelsea deal, they both kind of also been linked with getting players in return of Everton. Cashan obviously plays in return, or Pulisic was one mentioned last night. Conor Gallagher's another player being mentioned. Obviously, it's well documented that Frank Lampard's obviously an admirer of the midfielder. Do you think that would soften the blow for the Blues if they were to get, you know, Tottenham deal, for instance, like Lucas Moura mentioned as someone possibly coming to Goodison? Would that soften the blow if Everton were able to get one or two players in, as well as some cash for Richarlison, if the Brazilian was to depart?
Depends what the cash is in the first place. If it was £55 million plus player, yeah. If it was £35 million plus player now. So it's still the same thing, isn't it? The only thing about what you mentioned there is obviously, I think, one of the areas is a creative midfielder, isn't it, that we're just crying out for. And if a Chelsea deal did involve Conor Gallagher, then that would be that would be an advantage, wouldn't it? But you've got to have the cash, haven't you? You know, I mean, I don't necessarily think that people are having us off, but it's just the fact that we need the cash, don't we? We need the cash. And if people are going to take advantage of that, that's what happens here in business, unfortunately. If they know you've got to sell, they know it, they will take advantage of that. It's just business, isn't it? And that's one of the issues you have when we get into the poor financial states that we've been under for the past few years. And at some point, we're going to have to sell somebody, aren't we? For two reasons. A, for, you know, profits and sustainability, and two, to generate cash to buy other players. So I think if we sit at Richarlison, that means you sell Calvert-Lewin, doesn't it? You know what I mean? It's one's got to go. I mean, because we've only got three saleable assets, haven't we, at the club, the goalkeeper and the two strikers. So, yeah, it'd just be interesting to see what happens there. And think Chris said it's the ideal time, isn't it, to sell Richarlison, I think. But clubs know our financial position, so they'll take advantage of that, won't they? I mean, what ideally what you want is you want two or three clubs chasing them, don't you? At the same time, that's what you want. But I don't think that's happening, is it really? So yeah, we'll see. But as for the players, Conor Gallagher, yeah, but you've got to have the cash as well, Conor, you know.
Paul, this is a sad kind of episode, isn't it, for the position Everton find themselves in. You know, years of mismanagement have really come back to haunt the club, and the fact that, you know, the one of the best players, one of the most, you know, appreciated players by the fans for a long time, is potentially going to leave the club for a, you know, possibly a knockdown price due to the club's financial position, due to the need to sell, due to the need to overhaul the squad, is probably the most glaring, you know, sight we've seen, haven't we, of the Farhad Moshiri mismanagement over the last five to eight years since he comes to the club.
Yeah, without question. You know, if you're not playing Champions League football regularly or battling for trophies or Europa League, your best players are always in danger of being, you know, cherry picked by, you know, the leading clubs. But, and that's still the case here with Richarlison. But that's the thing with this. Yeah, of course, as fans, we do not want to lose Richarlison, but really it seems to be almost a necessity, because you cannot make the kind of losses that we've made in years gone by and wasted the millions and millions that we've wasted and not pay a price for it. And that's why, you know, Adam did a pretty strong piece, didn't he, at the end of the season. And it hit a nail on the head, really, because even though there were fantastic scenes after the Crystal Palace game and the players and Frank Lampard, and obviously the fans most importantly, deserved a lot of credit for helping get the team over the line and survive in the Premier League, you know, it can't mask what's happened these last couple of years. And really, it's going to take a good couple of years, probably 4, 5, 6 transfer windows to get back on an even keel. And it is sad that it's come to this, but try and be a bit more positive. This is what we've got, you know, if we're going to try and develop the club in a different foot now, this is what we've got to do. We've got to bring in players like Richarlison and get 3 or 4 good years out of them. And if it doesn't lead Everton to success, then you do get a good price for them. And I still think, as I say, 60 million would be a good price. I think they could get more, but the fact that he's got two years left on his contract's not probably in our favour either. But yeah, the big thing is there's no getting away from it. I think the club need this. You know, you see other clubs now have started the business, someone like Aston Villa, you would see maybe as a bit of a competitor. I know it looks like we've got Tarkowski is in the bag, but obviously he's a free transfer. To me, the feeling is that we need to sell a Richarlison or a Calvert-Lewin, and it seems to be the interest more in Richarlison at the moment, to set in place what's to follow with Frank Lampard. He needs the money as well, you know. The days where Moshiri would just bankroll managers are no longer here. So, yeah, you're right, Conor. It is a sad indictment, really.
Bees, we all just touched on him there, and James Tarkowski. And there's been a lot of talk and continues to be a lot of talk around him moving to Everton. You know, I think how we understand the deal, you know, his deal is in place and he will become an Everton player. But obviously, you've done some digging last week and you discovered why it's been all quiet on the Everton front and why there's been no official confirmation that a deal has been agreed and what we can expect. And the reasons were pretty interesting, Bees, weren't they, what you uncovered?
Yeah. Yes, I understand. I mean, Paul knows about this as well, as, you know, various sources that we've got, that a deal is done for James Tarkowski. It's no secret that he was on his way out of Burnley. He was on the retain and released list as of one, I think, of the 14 players who were being let go, and they'd indicated on that. He told them even several weeks ago that he wouldn't be re-signing, that he was looking for a fresh challenge. So we all know he was leaving Burnley. It's become kind of an open secret that Everton were in poor position, and it seems that, to my understanding, that a deal has been done now. But they're keeping quiet given the delicate situation which currently exists between Everton and Burnley. And obviously that alludes, I guess, to the the relegation battle between the two clubs. So not just an on-field rivalry there, but obviously the day after Everton had secured their Premier League status, there was that talk, wasn't there, at the time of Burnley and Leeds, potential challenge to Everton's finances. But again, as Everton are adamant that they have done everything by the book, liaised with the Premier League at every turn, and they said people are welcome to come and have a look because they've got nothing to hide. But yeah, given that delicate situation, we believe that's the reason why there's been no official confirmation as of yet. But I mean, come the end of the month, obviously he becomes officially out of contract at Burnley anyway. So come July and the players return, I would expect him to be joined up with Frank Lampard's squad for the start of pre-season training.
Gav B's just touched on the start of pre-season training there, which isn't far away. It's a couple of weeks before the Blues return back to Finch Farm. If you're Frank Lampard sitting here now, are you a little bit nervous that things aren't maybe perhaps moving as fast as what you would have liked? And it's still a little bit, you know, nervous that one of your big stars, who probably will have to leave the club back before he's alluded to, still remains, and you've not been able to bring anyone but, you know, free agent James Tarkowski in?
I don't know, on the basis that there's lots of stuff going on that you're not aware of, aren't you? You know what I mean? There's stuff going on behind the scenes and progress being made about deals or players or inquiries made that actually we're not possibly not aware of that club officials are. So got to take that into account. Would I be nervous? Maybe not at this moment in time, but was it still relatively early? I think we're just getting over the end of last season. Never mind getting back to pre-season.
That was not that far away. It's not that far away to start.
Yeah, we're still in recovery mode, aren't we, from the end of the last campaign?
I think we'll be recovering for a long time, but
I think if you get Tarkowski in, and as long as there's progress being made, but this goes back to the original point, isn't it? We need to sell somebody. And the longer than the transfer window, the Charleston or somebody that we need to sell is still at Everton, that reduces their value even further. So I'd be more nervous perhaps if I was Frank that we've not sold anybody than brought anybody in. That'd be my concern, because everything's dependent on us selling somebody. You know, so that it's the start of this pod, isn't it? That's what I'd be concerned about.
Paul, in an ideal situation, you know, as an Everton fan, obviously they'd love no one to leave and the best place to remain and to push on to Frank Lampard. But do you think if Everton fans had a choice between one of the three, you know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Richarlison, or Jordan Pickford leaving the summer, and them three remaining, but there being no real business coming in and the squad stays as it is, or one of them has to leave and the overhaul begins, what way would you be sized on? Because obviously, the longer this goes on, and if Everton, all three of them remain, the less likely is that Everton will be as active as what people would hope for in the transfer window.
I think, personally speaking, one has to go, because I think it's got to allow Frank to stamp his mark on this squad, really, because, you know, with the greatest respect in the world, they did the business at the end, or they did what they needed to do at the end of last season, but for too long, the vast majority of this squad have underperformed, so it does need a bit of a clean sweep, and we've got to see what a true Frank Lampard team looks like going forward. Obviously, when he came in, you could see he had a certain idea about how he wanted to play, and then we had games like Tottenham away, where I think the penny dropped eventually, didn't after Burnley, like, that now's the time, maybe not for philosophy, now is the time for just getting the points needed. But going forward, I don't think he'll want to play like that all the time, and I'm not sure we've got the players in to do that, really. So he is going to have to bring players in. And as I say, I think it's just a fact of where the club is at the moment that we do have to sell. I'd be concerned. Of the three, I think Richarlison's the most saleable asset, because I think he's had such a strong end to the season. You know, he is a Brazil international. That Chelsea have come into the mix. Tottenham clearly have been interested as well. From Chris's story about how interested Chelsea are, that may help us. Doesn't sound like there's a string of clubs knocking down the door for him, but the fact that those two could be in the mix, could be beneficial to us if we are looking for a big sale, because Chelsea have got new owners. Tuchel will want money to spend. And obviously, Conte, you appoint a manager like Conte at Tottenham, you're not going to back him, really. You've got to back him if you're going to appoint a manager like that. So probably the least person I want to lose is Richarlison. But I think it's the one that will happen. Because I think with Calvert-Lewin, clearly a talented striker who's had a very difficult season for a number of reasons, personally and professionally, it sounds. But bar from Newcastle, is there going to be a market for him at the moment? It looks like Arsenal signed Jesus, and as good as Pickford's been for a long time for England, a good two seasons for Everton now as well. I just wonder if there's a market for him either. So I hate to say, because I absolutely love Richarlison, I really do, but I'm kind of like settled in my mind with it now that he's the player who will have to leave. And as Chris was saying at the start of the podcast, as long as we get a good price for him, because I do think 50 million is not right at all. But as much as I would hate to see him leave, the squad needs freshening up. And if the only way we can freshen up the squad is by selling a player, I think that's the way it'll have to be.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. You know Amazon Prime is not just a shipping subscription, right? It's got everything, including streaming TV and movies on Prime Video. And of course, Prime's fast, free shipping. Go from watching your favorite shows to getting your favorite things. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
Unfortunately, talk of Chelsea is going to continue because the lovely Premier League fixture computer lose an opening game of the new season against Thomas Tuchel's side at Goodison Park, which is scheduled to be played on Saturday the 6th of August with a 5:30 kickoff live on Sky Sports. Bees, you're obviously covering the fixture release last Thursday for the Echo. It's always a big day. I don't know why, because it's just, you know, this team's playing to them, you know, I never really understand the hype. But was you excited when you saw the fixture list drop and the Blues are being handed Chelsea first game of the season?
I don't know if excitement is the right word.
Possibly.
It would add another layer of intrigue, wouldn't it, if Richarlison did end up going to Chelsea, given that, you know, so recently he scored that incredible winner for Everton against Chelsea, the coolest man in Goodison Park to take that chance. And obviously then there's the flare incidents and all that went on with that. So,
and the dog,
please
don't forget the dog outside.
Of course, yeah, dogs of war. It would be quite surreal, wouldn't it? I don't know how Evertonians would take it, but if he was to potentially make his Chelsea debut in that evening kickoff, but whatever happens to Richarlison, big game to start the season with for Everton. One of the regular challengers for the top of the Premier League. But I mean, it's a fixture that Everton have won for the past four seasons. One of them, of course, against Frank Lampard's Chelsea. But yeah, it's a big one to start with, but not necessarily a daunting one. I think Everton, I mean, it's August, so I don't know how dark it's going to be. But, you know, an evening kickoff perhaps favouring the Blues there. And everyone be up for that one regardless. I mean, everyone obviously seems to have their ideas, don't you? They look at the fixtures and then they say, oh, that's, they've just, you know, it has to be one or the other. Either it's a good start or it's a bad start. It's an easy start or it's a tough start. And if things don't work out the way that they envisaged, they start panicking. I mean, a lot of people have deemed this to be a bad start stroke, tough start forever. And I think, well, they've just finished 16th with the lowest equivalent points total in the entire club's history, joint with 2004. So I think Everton could never be, whoever they were handed in these opening fixtures, go, oh, well, we'll steamroll these and, you know, they'd be top of the table come September. That was never going to be the case, but I don't think there's anything, looking at the fixtures as a whole for the season, there's no one sort of month that you look at and you're like, oh, that's absolutely terrible or it's really daunting. Obviously, the more there are what deemed to be on paper tougher periods than other ones. But I think it is. None of us can really predict what sort of form the team or any of their opponents are going to be come, you know, mid-season and let alone next May. And obviously you've got the first ever break mid-season for 2 months because of the first ever Winter World Cup to throw into the mix as well. So we don't know how it's going to pan out. But yeah, people have deemed it. Some people have deemed it to be a difficult start for Everton. But I'm not concerned. Obviously, Everton are going to be up against it as coming on the back of the season they just had. But I didn't look at it and go, oh dear, this is terrible or anything like that. I think it's one to take in their stride.
Well, rest assured, Everton fans, we've got nothing to worry about at the start of the season. Chris Beasley has spoken. But Gav, it's 2 home games and 3 away games for the Blues in the month of August before Liverpool, Arsenal and West Ham lie await in September. Are you on the same page as Bees there in terms of the start, or are you one of them looking at that thinking that's tough and Frank Lampard's going to need to graft hard to get to pick up points in that run?
Bit of both, really. I think out for this price of 5:30 in the first week in August, Chris.
I hope we've got to shut our shorts on more than anything.
I think. I don't know. I'm with you a little bit on this, Connor. I'm a bit.
A lot of hype for no reason.
I get why people are interested. Don't really know. My experience of this is type of thing is your good runs. When you think of a good set of fixes, you don't do as well as what you're expecting. When you've got a bad set of fixes, you do better than what you're expecting. Yeah. I think that's just the way things are set up. You've got to play big teams, haven't you, sometime? You know, I'm I was more interested in the fact that it's 16 time in 20 seasons, the first derby of the seasons at Goodison, rather than Anfield. That's the first thing I always look out for on the fixture list. And I did make a few inquiries last week on the on social media. This fella who claims to know, the fella who sets the fixture list, alleged that it comes out like that every year because he has the same template every season. Nobody's asked him to change it, which makes a lot of sense. But yeah, I think I don't really go for the good run and bad run, to be honest with you. It takes. You know, early in the season would be a little bit unpredictable anyway, can't it? I would think I'm more interested to see how this this World Cup break affects things, though. Because there's like quite a intense batch of games, isn't it? Before November, and smaller squads may suffer. So I'm more interested in that, really.
Because it is really interesting, isn't it? Because the gap, I think it's 6 weeks before the last game before the games restart, isn't it, in December. Now, obviously, there was a big thing made of, I know it was a lot different when the COVID pandemic hit, and I think it was 9 weeks, wasn't it, between the last set of games and the first game back. But a lot of teams have had momentum going into them, you know, when the pandemic break come, never really hopped back that momentum when the games started. And ones who struggled initially, we're able to regroup over them 9 weeks. You know, look at Aston Villa, for instance, they managed to stay up by the teeth and go again. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what position teams find themselves in and whether they're able after that 6 weeks.
Go again and
get themselves over the line.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the difference is not every player is going to the World Cup, is it? You know, everybody was affected by the pandemic, some clubs more than others. But it's just be interesting to see the different dynamics of this season, how it affects players. And how, you know, we saw the post-pandemic stuff, didn't we, where players are obviously unfit, and whether that intensity of the games before November affects players and coming back after 6 weeks. Because what will the players do who are not in World Cup squads over the 6 weeks? They're going to have to train, aren't they? All that type of stuff. But you're not match fitter. But so it's just been interesting to see what happens there. And I think that might affect things. And obviously the England requested that there was no top six games between each other in the week before the leave for the World Cup, which raised a few eyebrows in our house and all that. Yeah, so it's just going to be an interesting campaign, really. I'm not sure what our fixtures, I suppose, but just trying to think aloud there. Do you want a big team straight after the World Cup?
Well, that is the...
Is there only 4 days between the World Cup final and first set of fixtures? as somebody said, if you're the World Cup winner, I don't think they're going to be playing the first game when they come back. They'll probably be out celebrating somewhere. So it's not just the start of this season, is it? It's the time before the World Cup. And after the World Cup, you've got to think about...
But the first game's back are Boxing Day, aren't they? Everton's first game is Boxing Day.
I think the finals, what's the final? The 21st or...
18th it is.
18th, yeah.
So taking into account the travelling back, I suppose, as well.
Yeah. So you've got sort of two seasons, haven't you, in one? So it's the games and Christmas as well. So, yeah, it's just going to be a very interesting campaign, really.
We
from that angle. Not that I support a Winter World Cup, by the way. I think it's a shocking idea for the record.
Gav has led me on beautifully there because he just mentioned it, and I was going to come to you and ask this because one member of our sports desk who's not with us today, Adam Jones, was particularly irate at the Gareth Southgate's request and England's request for one of the big six to face each other in the final weekend of matches before his squad assembles to go to Qatar. For all those Everton supporters out there who question the integrity of the Premier League and, you know, question the fact that the big six get favoured, a move like this does nothing to dislodge that myth, does it? Or to dislodge them claims and if anything, kind of backs them up. And there's a bit of truth there, isn't it, that the big clubs do get favoured and, you know, Gareth Southgate's decision is obviously been approved by the Premier League bosses.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible, isn't it, Nearly? You know, the fixture list is supposed to not be able to do, you know, put personal requests in for what games you want there and then. And I just think, you know, so all of a sudden we're putting the best interest for the national team forward. It just seems particularly rich, really. You know, could we not turn around and said, well, you know, before the World Cup, can we not have an away trip at Bournemouth? You know, like, why does it work for certain clubs should not have that influence or the ability to have that? So we had all those feelings that Evertonians do have about, well, that kind of buys the top six. It is really damn known with that, really. It's ridiculous. You know, if Liverpool would have played Manchester City that weekend or Arsenal would have played Tottenham, it's an intense game, but they're going to go into an intense World Cup schedule, you know, something like we've never seen before, being played in the winter. I don't understand it. You know, the fact that, as Gav rightly said, I think is it October, where there's something like six or seven rounds of Premier League games, the Champions Leagues is, I think it's going to be all done by the group stages by early November. So, no, on a sporting merit point of view, I don't think it's right at all.
Willow, I'll stick with you for this next part, because there was some big news that came out of Everton yesterday, and that was the appointment of a new academy director. Paul Tait has also been promoted to under-23 boss, and Leighton Baines has been named under-18 boss. Obviously, a little bit of continuity there, but a fresh face at the top. Obviously, Everton fans have been questioning and looking for, you know, long overdue shake-up off the club's academy system, and this is a step in the right direction, isn't it, from Kevin Fairwell?
Yeah, he certainly seems to be getting his feet under the table, doesn't he, in terms of the appointments he's made. Obviously, splitting the main role from what David Underhill had, a dual role. He's got that boxed off. Leighton Baines seems to have impressed everyone, as is not really that surprising. So he's got a chance to go onto the coaching pathway properly now. But quite interesting, I know Adam did a piece earlier in the week, the fact that they're doing like an analytical role for the academy, and the fact that they're going to have a loan pathway manager as well. You know, as sad as it is to say, working at the Echo, we know how the team across the park have been working off the field in recent years, and we've become accustomed to some of these roles. But it does seem like the academy's, if not modernised, but there's definitely a new way of working there, and it's going to be so important now, you know, to get these appointments right, because if we are going into a different era where money is no longer an objective, Moscardi is to stay around, that is. Now more than ever, the academy is going to be so important. We've seen with Anthony Gordon the progress he's made last season, but we're going to need more of them. You know, probably over the last few years, there's probably not been anywhere, you know, after Barclay, I don't know if I'm right in saying this, after Barclay up until Gordon, there's probably no one who's been up to that required standard. Tom Davies has obviously had his moments, no question about that, but there's still question marks over whether he's a long-term Everton and Premier League player. So, yeah, I'm quietly encouraged from what Fellwell's doing, and the three appointments. He knows Prosser, looks like he's got an excellent background, he's got a good CV. And Paul Tate has worked his way up through the academy. And as I say, everyone knows about Leighton Baines. What a fantastic player. What a good guy he seems. And it seems like he is going on the coaching pathway as well. So, yeah, it sounds encouraging.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
After countless steps and more than a few miles, your dog drives you forward one last time to make that final climb. And as the rising sun peeks out from the horizon, you know, incredible happens here because it starts here with the fuel that makes it all possible, ProPlan Sport. Discover advanced nutrition made to fuel strength and stamina in active dogs like yours at ProPlanSport.com.
B's obviously, you know, Gareth Prosser was the big appointment in terms of taking the academy director role. And being the man trusted with, you know, developing and coming up with strategy for Everton Academy. We wrote a piece last night about, you know, Leighton Baines and his role as under 18s coach. And yeah, there really isn't any kind of better mentor, is there, for young lads to look up to and be inspired by than Leighton Baines.
Yeah, there are three very different characters there, because obviously you've got Leighton Baines, who's coming into it, the Premier League player, but relatively new to the coaching side of things, although he has been doing bits for 2 years now behind the scenes of Everton's youngsters. See, Paul Tate, very much a long-serving Everton Academy man at various levels. And then Gareth Prosser, the outsider who comes in, but then somebody who has worked with the director of football, Kevin Fellwell, previously and very successfully at Wolverhampton Wanderers. So it's a nice balance, it would seem. Leighton Baines, yeah, absolutely terrific. What an inspirational figure he was. And, you know, somebody who would never sort of fall into that narrow typecast of footballers that sometimes ourselves in the media can be guilty of putting pigeonhole in them. He's always done things his own way, but, you know, a local lad. And it's interesting with Leighton's own story, you know, the fact that he was let go as a teenager by Everton, established himself as a youngster at Wigan Athletic, and then ended up coming back to Everton for what was a club record fee for a defender at the time, back in 2007, when they paid $6 million for him. So I guess he's tasked with making sure he doesn't let other ones like himself slip through the net, and that Everton are actually able to nurture them, develop a pathway for them to that first team, rather than like himself ended up having to leave and then come back for a lot of money. So if anyone's going to be able to do that, hopefully Leighton's the man. Obviously, there's a huge attrition rate in youth football as well. He doesn't have to just deal with the ones who do make it in the stars of tomorrow. He'll have to obviously deal with the many lads who don't obviously have their dreams come true. But I think he's the sort of thinking man who would hopefully help on that score as well. So I welcome the appointment. And I guess if Everton were just to get one other player of Leighton Baines' calibre to sort of progress to the first team under his stewardship, well, it'd be an appointment which is thoroughly vindicated.
Gav, obviously, Bees has just touched on there in terms of the two internal appointments, but for an outsider in Gareth Prosser to come in, obviously, you know, Kevin Fellwell from the time scale up Wolves, but it's something I haven't fans been crying out for a long time, an outside figure to come in and look to, you know, reboot and give things a bit of a shake-up, because, you know, for a long time, it's been one of the most pointed out points on our list, was that it was always internal appointments. It was always people from within the club who kind of got these roles.
Yeah, yeah. I'm fascinated as what was he? Professional game, academy audit manager as well, which involved going around all the academies in the country. So I would have picked up experience there as well, wouldn't he? And sort of a lot of outside knowledge. Yeah, I can only be supportive of all these moves, to be honest with you. I think it's good to see Telwell, you know, putting his stamp on proceedings, being a leader. He's worked with Prosser before, and that's good, I would say. And I like it. It's funny one, Leighton, isn't he, really? For somebody, I think it was pretty much well known that I don't think he wanted any involvement in football when he finished. I think it was the sort of received wisdom, wasn't it? He sort of climbed up the greasy pole already quite quickly in his 2 years. So it'd be interesting to see Leighton's development, I think, out of that group. But yeah, you can see far more clear structure of people being in charge and people being, you know, the director, academy director, and also Thirlwell being director of football, will oversight over everything in the club, which I don't think has necessarily been the case before, whoever you've had in that role. So that's good to see. And I can only qualify that by saying, for me, academy football, you've got to get the talent in the first place. You have the best academy in the world, but if you don't get the right, like, kids, you know, in the gateway, as it were, then I think you're struggling. We've got to get the recruitment right at, you know, an early age. So that to me is still the priority. So yeah, we'll see. But that's good. It's good to see. Good to see a structure. Good to see, as I say, a bit of outside thinking coming in, and hopefully this is the start of something different to what we've had before. And I think, as you say, there's still three or four roles still to be filled as well within that group, isn't
it? Yeah.
So yeah. So I'm very pleased.
Just before we finish, gents, very quickly, because it's still the talk of a lot of Evertonians and the main talking point when Blues meet up at the minute. Bees, take over talk. It's all gone very quiet, hasn't it? After, you know, 10 days of, of all kinds of reports and figures being thrown about and etc. It's all gone very quiet. Does this lead toward a takeover, or do you think this is, you know, things that kind of even themselves out and we'll get a clear picture in the coming weeks?
Well, I think it was all obviously foisted upon us very quickly and unexpectedly at the time. These talks have obviously been going on for a prolonged period, but it's my understanding that even senior figures within the Goodison Park corridors of power, other than Mr. Mashiri, only became privy to this information a few days before ourselves. So it was sort of very quickly appeared, like I said, less than a week after Mr. Mashiri had written his open letter to the fans, and as Gav alluded to, possibly said goodbye in a way with his apology. We were aware that these talks had progressed from initial talks over investment in the stadium to full-blown potential takeover. It's going to be a slow process either way, whether Mr. Mashiri ends up retaining control or whether one of these consortiums, and we believe the one headed by Peter Kenyon is the one that's obviously at the forefront at the moment, whether then do end up taking control. It's not going to be done overnight. It's going to be a lengthy process, and we just hope that, you know, Everton can continue functioning properly in the meantime, because it's not in anybody's interest, and certainly not Mr. Mashiri's, to have any sort of season akin to the one they've just come out of. Like I said, that maybe the hands are tied to a certain extent with the financial fair play, but he's got to make sure that the team are competitive on the pitch next season, and also that everything continues as it is. Thankfully, the one thing that is going swimmingly at the club and on track, the new stadium, because I believe whether Mr. Mashiri's in charge or not, he is he's pledged to making sure that happens, and that will obviously have to be taken into account who anybody takes over. Yeah, so we had that initial flurry with the bombshell, as it were, that the club were potentially up for sale, but now it could actually be a long and drawn out process. And I'd welcome any input from if Mr. Kenyon or any of his consortium want to come and speak to us at the Echo. I'm sure there are thousands of our readers who want to know what their intentions are and what their plans for the club would be, because it not only would be fascinating, but obviously people have an interest and a concern to know who are these people who want to take over Everton, and what do they intend to do.
Well, I'm sure Peter Kenyon is consulting Visa. I've listened to the Roblox podcast. We make sure
they're interested too.
Well, they're missing out if they're not, aren't they? They're missing out. Yeah. Gav, just to finish, and I'll come to you. And Bees makes a good point there, doesn't he? Because no matter what is going on off the pitch and the talk over, Everton can't lose sight, can they, of what he's doing on the pitch and how they need to make things right this time around, because, you know, they can't afford, we've said it enough, haven't we? They can't afford another season like last season, because, you know, You do well, aren't you, for avoid it twice, given how bad they were at times last season.
Yeah, I think I said at the start of last season it was the most important season in living memory for me.
Well, the football,
repeat the same. Yeah, I mean, go back to what we were saying at the start. You know, the one thing I would say is, and this is probably decent news for Frank, is he's probably got the lowest expectations of any Everton manager since Moyes went into the 2004-05 season in terms of where we finish.
Yeah.
So I think that's actually quite good news for Frank. And probably good news for supporters, to be fair. But yeah, you can't say, okay, so do nothing. We'll just be happy to stay 17th or whatever, 16th. You've got to, but I can only go back to what we said at the start. It's got to sell somebody. You know, that's the recurring theme of this pod, isn't it, really? Yeah. So let's see what happens.
Gents, we will leave things there. Thank you very much for your time and joining me. I think you've chewed the fat over enough of the goings on at Everton. But don't worry, listeners, we will be back next week because, as what's been the case since the season finished, there's always something going on at Goodison Park. Yeah. There'll be transfers, incoming staff outgoings, takeover talk, fixture talk, you name it. It's all going on at Everton. And we'll be back next week for another edition of the Royal Blue podcast. But thank you very much for listening this afternoon.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue podcast from the Liverpool Echo.